Some days are terrible, you wish that you were dead. And some days are magical, like great banana bread. Someday we'll be friends with the voices in our heads. The voices in our heads.
Hey everybody, how you doing? Congratulations on not taking your own life this week. I'm so proud of you. That's fucking amazing, okay? My name is Christina Hutchinson. This is The Voices in Our Heads. We have a very exciting episode for you today. But first, there's just some topics I want to get off my tits before we get to our guest, because we're going to do guests, okay? Mikey, fantastic birthday party.
Thank you.
You had a great party. I forgot your present today. You have to open it on camera so that it's a write-off. Because your girl's saving money now. Pew, pew, pew. Okay. That's why I have an Instagram account for my dog. His food's a write-off. It's part of my business, IRS. Get off my D. You had a great birthday party. I have not been energized from a social gathering in a long time. My whole life, I used to think I liked being social. And then COVID happened, and I was like, oh, that's not true. I was just faking it. I was just like, hi, guys. I'm so happy to be here. I didn't want to be there. But it's nice to go to a social gathering where there's multiple people that you know, and it's somebody's birthday, and you have fun.
I felt energized from it too.
That's good.
I felt good. As you know, I had a crisis going in.
Yes, you did.
And,
About what?
No, it was just being 35 and reevaluating my life and like all that stuff like I do every
old.
Year.
Get your Cialis ready, Michael.
But I felt energized too. I was happy that you came. All the people that I was hoping would show up came.
Good.
And I was happy about that.
Was there anyone you didn't want to show up that came?
There was one person.
Oh, damn.
I won't say who.
Why'd you? Yeah, I do that. You invite them for prosperity, you know, posterity.
Yeah.
Is that the right word?
Posterity,
Posterity, whatever.
Yeah,
posterity. I said it. And yeah, when they show up, you're like, damn it.
Yeah.
Wasn't expecting you here. I'm just going to talk to everybody else.
It's not the worst thing, but it's like, you know, I'll take it in the sense that
you're so popular
that one person had to be there to have a good time with everybody, like all my actual friends. Like, yeah. Fine. You know,
my actual friends. Well, that's amazing. Well,
and that person wasn't you, by the way.
I didn't think it was.
Okay, good.
Until
I'm making
now.
Sure.
Okay. Next week you'll open your birthday present on camera.
Yay.
Because I freaking forgot it. But I had a great time at your party, so thanks for having a birthday party. And then I rode a city bike home across the 59th Street Bridge, my favorite freaking bridge, because I was so jazzed because I had such a good time. And I listened to music with my headphones. I know, don't come for me. But I was listening to Beyonce because it was her birthday yesterday, September 4th. Beyonce, Giselle Knowles Carter, happy 43rd birthday. Love you so much. Love you so much. I'll talk about you more in a second. But I was listening to Beyonce music and my curls were down and they were blowing in the wind like I was at a Beyonce concert. And I'm like, oh, I never want this bike ride to end. It was my favorite bike ride I've had in a while. Beyonce is the best person on the planet. But aside from that, I did a little Beyonce birthday post on my Instagram. And then, of course, I follow a ton of Beyonce fan accounts. And one of them, I happened to stumble across an account that had a clip from one of her tour shows. I think it was the Lemonade Tour, because that was her best album. That's my favorite Beyonce album. Renaissance is amazing, but Lemonade, fuck off with that. And it was, you know, mostly about being cheated on. And hey, guys, if you ever need evidence that cheating isn't personal, Jay-Z cheated on Beyonce. Cheating is not personal. It's never personal. Shania Twain got cheated on. What? That perfect angel? And then Beyonce? Come on. You know, it's not personal. But she had a quote that had me, I was on the couch when I was scrolling and I heard it through the video and I was like, what did she just say? And I paused it and I wrote it down. And I'm like, this is a thing I've been searching for a long time. She talked about how love is forgiveness, is forgiving the other person. But this quote, ooh, it had me in my feelings. Forgiveness is me giving up my right to hurt you for hurting me. Let that sink in. Forgiveness is giving. I love how she said it's my right. I have the right to hurt you because you hurt me, but I will give up that right because I forgave you. That is exactly what I have been trying to come to terms with in terms of forgiving people in my life. Everybody's got people in their lives that they need to forgive. And intellectually, I know, like, I forgive you because I know that forgiveness is for me, first and foremost, and the other person, which is great. But, you know, you put your oxygen mask on yourself first before your baby or whatever. And so it totally nails this desire that I have that's behind my road rage, that's behind anytime I get my heart broken by a friend, by a lover, by whoever, where the second I get hurt by you, there's not even seconds to think. I am on a mission to hurt you back way harder as quickly as I possibly can. Now, is that healthy?
No.
No, it's not. No, it's not healthy. And so that's the most beautiful definition of forgiveness I have ever come across so far. So thank you, Beyonce. There's this thing, and it's why the road rage, you know, when someone cuts me off, I say this in my stand-up set, when someone cuts me off and they don't use a blinker, everybody who's ever wronged me just pops up in my face and calls me a weak piece of shit, and I'll miss all my appointments that day to tailgate you, okay? But I was talking with my manager on a Zoom call, and I was telling him about this definition that I just discovered, and we had a discussion about road rage because he said he used to have it. Apparently, rage goes away as you get older. Thank God. But, you know, our ego tricks us into thinking that if somebody cuts us off or does something shitty on the road, we have to get revenge because if we don't, we are weak. But it's actually the much stronger choice to just go. Let them do it. And I don't ever want to do that. But I have done it before, but mainly because I was like doing something else in the car and I was too distracted to get pissed, which is kind of helpful. And then if somebody else is in the car, I usually don't get road rage. But it is the stronger choice to not tailgate that person until they drive off the road. Allegedly it is. So forgiveness is me giving up my rights to hurt you for hurting me. Ah, that is when you know you've forgiven, when you don't have the desire to hurt the other person. So have I forgiven some of the people in my life that I should have?
No.
Not yet, because I still want to hurt them a little bit. But intellectually, I know that that's wrong. So we're making progress. Speaking of musicians, I went to the Incubus concert last week. Brandon Boyd, just eat me out. Just eat me out. Every day, all the time. Or I'll suck your dick. It doesn't matter. Whatever you want. Whichever one. Brandon Boyd is the sexiest man one of the sexiest men on the planet. His lyrics are absolutely gorgeous. And they've been a part of my being since I was very young, since I've listened to Incubus as a teenager. And getting to see them was really rewarding and so horny. I was so horny. And I went with my boyfriend who totally got it. So he couldn't say shit. But Incubus, I wish I was bisexual so bad. I'm just not. But like, at the same time, Nicole Rowe, who is the female bass player for Incubus, she is so sexy. It hurts me. It hurts me. Watching her play, I was like, God damn. The way when a musician plays their instrument well, usually like when I was younger, I'm like, you could tell what a guitar player and a singer is like in bed by how they play their instrument. And I do stand by that. Every boyfriend I've ever had on this planet Earth has been a musician. That's how bad I want the music in me, I guess. the way Nicole Rowe plays the bass is so sexy, and she's gorgeous, but she's not a lot of makeup kind of gal. She's just naturally really beautiful, long blonde hair. She was so hot. And then the whole concert, I was so distracted by this fantasy of Brandon Boyd and Nicole Rowe making out on their tour bus, and then calling me and singing "Wish You Were Here." I really want that to happen.
What's it like to? What do you think it's like to perform when most of the audience is giving you "eat me out" eyes?
Can't be bad. It can't hurt. You know, I think when men want to fuck a woman, when straight guys are like interested in a female performer, that's one type of energy. But when a group of women are all staring at a man singing and they want to fuck the living daylights out of that man, I mean, I feel it in the air. I feel it way harder than the men wanting to bone the lady. And I imagine that energy gets a little overwhelming, although maybe it doesn't. Because when you're that sexy, he's so sexy. Hey, Siri, how old is Brandon Boyd? How old is he?
Brandon Boyd is 48. 48. Years old.
Grr, level 48, Brandon Boyd. He's just so hot. He could be 68. I'd be like, let's go. Eat me out. What are we doing? What are we doing? Yeah, he's so sexy. Mm-hmm. What'd you say?
He looks good.
He's in shape. He's so in shape. And the way he moves, and eventually he took his shirt off. He took a long time to take his shirt off. I'm like, TikTok, motherfucker. the last couple songs he did with Sans shirt. And thank you for that. I was just filming close-up videos of him the whole time, and the lady next to me was laughing because she's like, that's nice. Can you airdrop me that later? Also, hey, when you go to a concert, to the people that film the whole concert, what are you doing? Why? You going to watch that? I have not watched my sexy videos of Brandon Boyd, and I have a rule for myself. Every time I go to a concert, I have a stricter rule for a Beyonce concert. I only allow myself to take a photo or video maybe for 20% of the duration of the show. Like that's how much I will allow my phone to be out in my hands because I want to, you know, see the show because that's why I came to Madison Square Garden to see the show, not to see it through a phone. I see everything else through a phone. I want to see a live show through a phone. But there was a woman in front of me that was she filmed the whole concert. And I'm like, are you looking at him? Look at him. In the flesh. We had great seats, okay? And then another lady was FaceTiming her friend in. And so her phone, their screen was facing her and she was like two rows in front of me. And I just was I was so distracted by watching her friend watch the show. And I'm like, can we not FaceTime our friends in? Maybe she should have gotten a ticket, you know? Or maybe she's ill, whatever. I hope she's okay. But yeah, people who film the entirety of the concert. What are you doing? How about you live your life? You know, I think that would be good. I feel like that's why we go to concerts, to experience music that we all love in a group setting. It's very magical. And it gets way more magical when Brandon Boyd removes his shirt. And it would have even been better if you removed all the other clothes. But hey, what are you going to do? You know? Okay. I was talking to, I forget who I was talking to. I was trying to reorganize my boyfriend's seasonings cabinet, his herbs and stuff. And I bought all these Lazy Susans. But then it made me go, who the fuck is Susan? And why are we getting on her for being lazy? And I was looking up what is a Lazy Susan? Why is it called that? Who is Susan? Black Eyed Susan, Lazy Susan. Why is Susan getting all this shit? What did she do? Oh, she got punched and now she's lazy? Give Susan a break, maybe. But, you know, I was trying to find the origin of this. And basically, the internet doesn't know, but there's theories. Some believe Thomas Jefferson invented the lazy Susan.
Yeah, Thomas Jefferson.
Mm-mm. No? In the 18th century, referencing his daughter in the naming. As the story goes, his daughter Susan wasn't a fan of being served last at the dinner table and thus became his inspiration. First of all, if that story was true, how about you take care of your kid instead of calling her lazy for wanting food? The problem of this story is that Thomas Jefferson did not have a daughter named Susan. So that X's out that theory. Others point to Thomas Edison as the inventor, believing that the turntable he created for his phonograph evolved into a lazy Susan. And then a lot of people were talking about, in the 17th century and 18th century, people calling their servants, which I'm like, servants? Were you paying them? Did they want to be there? So were you not paying them? Okay, so that's not a servant. But maybe they were talking about some area in the world that didn't have enslaved people. But just calling all their servants lazy. And I'm like, well, maybe being a servant isn't fucking fun, okay? How about you try it on for a day? Let's give Susan a break. Okay, now I have a new segment before we introduce our guest, which I'm so excited about. This new segment is called, You Okay, Girl? You okay, girl? Okay, so you okay, girl? Today, we're going to talk about this lady that I came across on Instagram, and then I looked up some information about her, and I just want to know, are you okay, girl? Are you okay? You good? You could be, but are you? You know, that's why I'm asking. Have you ever wondered what it was like to be an animal? Yes, every day of my life, I'd much rather be an animal. A woman who loves dogs since her childhood wanted to be a dog herself. She learned to jump and run on all fours like horses. Okay, so she had horses, and then she started to walk and gallop like a horse. And it's like, you know, when you see a kid walking backwards on their hands and knees down the steps in a horror movie. That's the vibe that I got when I watched this woman gallop through a grassy knoll like a horse. I mean, she's built a little different, but because her ass was a little too high, so her head was more closer to the ground than her butt. So it was like a horror movie horse. Ayla Kirstine from Norway learned a special skill of roaming around in the field and leaping over hurdles as if she were a horse. You okay, Ayla? She used to share videos of herself running and jumping like a horse on her Instagram handle. However, she's deleted her account since. Come on, girl. I mean, the videos don't go away. That's what we learned about the internet. If you post it, it's going to be there forever somewhere. I mean, there should be a fan account for you. Kirstine's abilities were first noticed on Twitter in Germany before spreading across the world. The equestrian never posted any explanation about her bizarre hobby. Which she doesn't owe us, but I still want to ask her, is you okay? Many people refer to her as Pferdmachtin, or horse girl in German. Recently, a video of Kirstine went viral on the internet, which shows her walking on a road on all fours, galloping around a field with a dog. And the video of her galloping in the field is wild. You guys got to look it up. It's like watching it is like... You know when someone shows you an AI video and there's like things that are very clearly off and it gives you like the ick, or it gives you like a, I don't even know what the feeling is, but you're like, I don't like that. That's how I felt when I watched Ayla Kirstine gallop around like a horse. I'm like, something's wrong. Also, wait, what was this? Celebrities of Let's, wait, there's another video I wanted to talk about. Oh, this woman, I think she's originally from England. She had a stroke. And when she woke up from her stroke, she spoke with a Chinese accent. Okay? Now,
2.5 years ago, she was rushed into hospital with a migraine.
Which she's a white lady.
With a voice she didn't recognize.
I have not actually heard my voice in a conversation for nearly 3 years now.
Wow.
Her initial response upon hearing how she used to sound from a bank telephone recording...
Good afternoon, thank you for calling.
...was to long for her old accent to return.
Yeah, I'm not actually ringing about my policy, though. I'm ringing for...
That's her old accent.
Did you show up my policy number?
Wow. She was British.
Me, but I feel like I want to say, well, she made a...
So glad I can't see the visuals right now.
Oh, it's just an older white lady.
Also glad she didn't come out talking like Louis Armstrong or something.
Hey, everybody. Zatarain's. Dinner from New Orleans. Fucking love those commercials. Like Rice-A-Roni. The San Francisco treat, bitch. That is so unfortunate. That's so unfortunate. Because she's not... You can't say she's not making fun of anybody. She literally had a stroke when she was British, because she is, and then woke up and she talked like that.
Or that's she's not a good. Genius.
I don't know, man.
Genius.
I feel like her job is just like, you know, an administrative assistant or some shit. Like, she's like, I don't have any use for this. I'm not a comedian. I mean, if she's a comedian, she could get canceled. But like, you can't get mad at her because that. But like, what is that brain? You get strokes and then you talk like you don't speak Mandarin. You speak like a Chinese person whose English is not their first language and then came to an English speaking country and learned English. I mean, perfection, the accent. I'm like, whoa, if I just heard that, I'd be like, oh, okay. It's a lady whose English isn't her first language. Maybe she's Chinese or maybe whatever. And what a time. You okay too, girl? You okay? I don't think she's okay. I think she and the horse girl should be friends because maybe they can form like a fucked up A-team, you know, like the next Marvel movie. One lady gallops like a horse. One lady talks Asian. And it's not great. And they can't really use their powers for anything other than this is what it is. You know, is we were born this way. Lady Gaga. We were born this way. Okay. Now on to our guest. We have a guest. Now I'm into woo-woo things. And this person, I got an email from this person who I've known for a very long time. He is I know him as a stand-up comedian. You know, the inspiration behind Nick Kroll and John Mulaney's Too Much Tuna. But he's a Renaissance man. He has so many hats, okay? He's a dentist. He's a freaking dentist. He's a healer. He's been on Guys We Fucked. I think the episode was called You Do Sexual Healing. And he created this thing called Star Therapy. It's a gentle system of talk and touch used to treat symptoms like migraine type headaches, facial and neck pain. STAR is an acronym for Spiritual Transformational Affirmative Resonance Therapy, used as a guided meditation alongside music. And I'm so excited. He will be speaking September 20th through the 22nd at the Omega Institute in Rhinebeck, New York. I have taken many courses at Omega. It is such a cool place. If you're into anything woo-woo and you want to like dive deeper, get more curious about it, Rhinebeck, New York is a gorgeous town. But I took a Laurel and Jackson 3-day workshop there and it was really cool. So he will be speaking in Rhinebeck at the Omega Institute of Holistic Studies September 20th through the 22nd. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome to the Voices in Our Heads, Jeffrey Gurian. We are here with Renaissance man, stand-up comedian, healer, dentist, Jeffrey Gurian. So happy to have you here.
Not as happy as I am to be here.
That's
it's so great
sweet.
To see you, Christina.
You
no,
as
it's
well.
The truth. I love seeing you.
So I was so excited to get an email from you saying that you have the workshop coming up in Rhinebeck at the Omega Institute. I went to the Omega Institute. I took a Laurel and Jackson 3-day workshop to try and talk to, well, to try and talk to ghosts, even though the workshop was really about like getting in touch with your spirituality and stuff, which you could argue is one and the same. But I love that place.
Yeah, it's a great place.
The energy of it is just so, it's gorgeous.
It's an old campgrounds and it's got a lake and a million activities.
Yeah.
It's a very serene place. You can feel the energy when you arrive. I went there a few times to see Deepak Chopra Marianne Williamson. And Carolyn Mace, who wrote the book Anatomy of the Spirit.
And her work on like archetypes and the religions
yes,
and stuff.
Amazing work.
She is incredible. Yeah. So how did you get to be woo-woo, as a lot of people would say? Woo-woo to me is a good word. It's not a derogatory term.
No, it started as a child. I was always fascinated by metaphysical things. I always knew that there was more to life than what you just saw on the surface.
Yep.
As a little kid, even, I was fascinated. And when I was about 7 years old, I knew intuitively that I could take away certain pain with my hands. I would do it on my sister.
Cool.
Like if she had pain, I would just say, I'll take it away. How a child would know that is very weird to me as an adult thinking about that. My parents didn't know anything about that. And I used it all my life, you know. And
what were some of the things that you helped? So your sister had like muscle pain or
she had a stomach ache or, you know, like.
Would you do this? Would you rub your hands? Death.
I would just put my hands, like healing through touch, just put my hands on her.
Wow.
And just think about it. And then she would say she felt better. And then I realized, like, after I got out of dental school, you know, there's this concept that when you find your true path, the universe will support you.
Mm-hmm.
So I went into practice and I was getting a lot of patients that had physical pain from stress, migraine headaches. That became a specialty of mine. I spent 12 years at NYU. As a clinical professor in oral medicine and orofacial pain.
Oh.
And because we live with so much stress, especially these last 4 years, people are clenching and grinding their teeth from stress. And they don't know that it causes a lot of physical symptoms.
Mm-hmm.
If you wake up in the morning and your neck hurts, the last person in the world you would think to tell would be your dentist.
Correct.
Why would you ever tell your dentist that your neck hurts? And if he doesn't ask, it doesn't get diagnosed.
Yeah.
And most dentists don't ask. I was just the keynote speaker on July 18th in Minneapolis at the Minneapolis Convention Center for the Academy of General Dentistry's 2024 convention. I spoke to 500 doctors. Yeah, it was crazy. They flew me out first class. It was a great
Jeffrey.
Honor. But
Delta One.
I got to talk about all this to tell them that needs to be part of everyone's medical history to check for neck pain and shoulder pain and back pain because that's all related to the jaw.
Mm.
And the TMJ, have you ever heard of TMJ?
I have, yes.
Okay, it stands for temporomandibular joint for anyone who's listening who's not familiar with it. And it's considered, energetically, it's considered a master joint, which means that it controls not only how your head feels, but how your whole body feels.
Ooh, that's
and it's the
one.
Reason why a lot of football players and weightlifters wear a special appliance called a MORA, M-O-R-A, a MORA appliance, mandibular orthognathic repositioning appliance, and it repositions the amount that your jaw is open. If you grind your teeth get smaller. If your jaw is overclosed, you lose physical strength.
Oh.
And if your jaw is at an optimum opening, you can become physically stronger. That's why weightlifters and football players often wear this appliance.
No way.
To gain physical strength. Yeah. So it's a master joint. It controls how you feel. So that was my specialty at NYU. If you just walk into a university and tell them that you take away headaches with your hands, they'll probably call the police.
Yeah, but, it's so annoying.
But they saw me doing that for 12 years, and they invited me to lecture to the entire faculty, which I did. And then the head of the TMJ department, a very well-known doctor named Michael Gelb, whose father wrote the book on TMJ, he asked me to do a treatment on him. And he was impressed enough. He had me lecture to his postgraduate students. So I've been using energy all my life.
Wow.
To create wellness.
Yeah.
And to take away pain. And energy is very real. It's like,
oh, yeah.
Like when I saw you, I gave you a big hug. You gave me a big hug. It feels good when you do that. You're actually exchanging energy when
totally.
You do that. And I always explain that to people who don't understand energy, that on a very simple level, you all experience it with something like that. If you're upset, and someone that you trust gives you a hug and you feel better afterwards, it's because you allowed them to transfer positive energy to you.
Yeah, and when you fall in love, it's your heart chakra opening. It's a combination of two people's energy that allows your heart chakras to like just open up, and it feels like the most euphoric bliss ever. I mean, that's a type of energy that is so palpable and undeniable that we chase all the time because we're sad and we grew up with, you know, not the best circumstances, a lot of us. So
everybody is holding what I call heart wounds. That's what led to my first
so
happiness book.
Yeah.
It's called Healing Your Heart by Changing Your Mind.
Yeah.
A spiritual and humorous approach to achieving happiness. From the time we're children, every time someone hurts your feelings or breaks a promise to you or insults you or bullies you or hurts you in some way, it stays lodged inside of us.
How do we get it out?
Well, that's the process.
Exercise my demons, Jeffrey.
That I talk about. And yeah, we're all holding these heart wounds, but they affect our self-esteem.
Uh-huh.
They affect our self-confidence.
Oh, yeah.
And they affect every decision we make in our lives. And I'll tell you why. Because every time you're called upon to make a decision, you think about what to do, right? You use your thoughts. Mm-hmm. Who else's thoughts can you use but your own? And if some of your thoughts are faulty, which is another thing I love to talk about, that we're holding thoughts that are not valid for us.
Yeah.
And most of them are negative about ourselves,
uh-huh.
that were given to us by people who did not have our best interests at heart.
Yep.
And sometimes it was even our parents, our family that we grew
sometimes
up with.
Sometimes it was.
And sometimes it was just people that crossed our path.
Mm-hmm.
But if your thoughts are not correct, your decisions are not going to work out for you, which is why people see the same unhealthy patterns in their lives, same bad job over and over again, the same bad relationship over and over again. And the only common denominator is us.
I know.
The other people change, but we keep making bad choices.
I know.
Because of our thinking.
Right. And I guess I was going to say, like, I intellectually have done a lot of childhood trauma work on myself with therapy, through mm-hmm. reading, through talking to people. And you can only get so far with intellectualizing your trauma. And it in fact, can make you kind of stuck. And I am somebody who, like, I'm trying to clear all the heart wounds as much as I can. And I was going to ask you, how do you know do you still have any in there? But I guess you look at how your life is going.
Yeah,
are your habits healthy?
That's such an interesting question to ask, you know, in my own case.
Can you tell energetically if I got more wounds? I mean, the answer is yes, but how many?
I don't know that I can say how many. I can usually feel. I'm sensitive to certain things. I'm an empath.
Yeah.
Which is a very difficult way to grow up.
It
there
is.
Was a time in my life, and I talk about sensitivity a lot because we're all more sensitive than we understand that we are. And
it's
people
tough.
Don't like to cop to being sensitive, especially men.
I know.
Men don't want to be sensitive. Women are gifted with a sensitivity that often feels like a burden instead of a strength because our society gives women the wrong message. It often says you're too sensitive.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe people have said that to you.
Oh, every day I say it to myself. Yeah.
It's the reason why women there are more female patients when it comes to stress-related illness than
yes.
men.
Yes, yeah.
Because men block their feelings because they don't think it's masculine to be sensitive. I had no choice. I was a very, very sensitive child. I started stuttering when I was 6 or 7 years old, and I stuttered very badly through my 20s and beyond.
Wow.
I could never say my last name. I could never say Gurian. And it's an interesting story to me. When I went to college, I made myself run for the president of the freshman class. I've always challenged my uncomfortability. I grew up with a lot of fears. Mm-hmm. So as a little kid, I was afraid of the dark. And for some reason, I made myself go in the dark. I hated the fact that I was afraid of the dark. I would have nightmares. And I made myself go in the dark. I remember that very clearly, as scared as I was. So I get to college and I'm stuttering and it's horrible. And I make myself run for the president of the freshman class. Now, I'm only 16 years old in college. I'm much younger than everybody. I skipped a couple of years. And I was determined that, well, I told myself if I could win this election, I wouldn't have to stutter anymore because it would show me that people liked me. Now, supposedly I was popular, but I didn't know it.
You didn't know it?
When I went to high school, they still did that stupid thing in the yearbook. The prettiest girl, the handsomest guy, the best athlete. They voted me most talented because I played the piano and the drums. And so it was a big popularity contest.
Yeah.
And so supposedly I was popular, but I didn't feel it. Mm. I felt very different from other people. So I went to a big college that was fed in by 7 different high schools. And I only knew the kids from my school. And I couldn't say my name. I could never say Jeffrey Gurian. Most stutterers can't say their own name.
Oh, interesting.
Way. It's a very interesting thing.
Wow, I wonder what the psychology is behind that.
Well, because your name is your identity. Mm. And if you're not happy with who you are, it's very difficult to tell somebody else who you are, to present yourself to someone else. It's no accident that all stutterers can't say their own names.
Right.
So anyway, I tell myself if I could win this election, I won't have to stutter anymore. I win the election. I'm the president of the whole freshman class of Hunter College, and I still stuttered. And it was a great lesson for me because it taught me that outside validation in life doesn't work. It doesn't matter how many people tell you you're gorgeous and talented and fabulous.
It does help a little, but yeah.
But matters what you think of that. Yourself.
Right. It's a, yeah, absolutely.
And that started my journey on wanting to cure myself. Not just wanting, but I was determined to cure myself. Because I realized one day I didn't stutter when I was alone. I could go into a room by myself.
Interesting.
And I could speak perfectly.
So it was nerves.
I only stuttered when I was trying to talk to somebody else, which, and I consider it grace. Sometimes you get knowledge from the universe. I consider it grace that I was told.
You got to download.
You can't have a disability based on your location. Right? A man with a limp limps in every room of his house. He can't go into a room and close the door and walk perfectly.
Yeah.
But if I could go into a room alone and say Gurian and say every other word that I couldn't say when I'm trying to talk to you, then theoretically it means there's nothing wrong with me.
Mm-hmm.
And that started my journey on learning about thought, about the power of the mind. And I realized that anything that I create, if I created this for myself, for whatever reason, I can uncreate it. And it takes a lot of work.
Very
wise.
A
lot of work. I worked for many years to take my mind apart, basically,
yeah.
And see what thoughts I was holding that were negative about myself. Why was I self-sabotaging? Why didn't I feel like I deserved to be like everyone else? And before I stopped stuttering, I was very nervous. And, you know, as an avocation now, I work with stutterers all over the world.
And have you healed them?
Yeah.
And oh, that's so rewarding.
And I teach them how not to stutter.
Do they cry because they're so happy?
Some do.
Oh,
some
that's
do.
Great.
Yeah. And it's a real sense of freedom, but it's very difficult. The stuttering community is very averse to being told that they can get better, believe it or not.
Interesting.
Yeah. I called the head of the stuttering, a famous stuttering institute down south, and I used my doctor thing so I could get the guy on the phone because I don't often introduce myself that way. And he got on the phone and I told him my story. And he had the nerve to say to me, no one's ever been cured of stuttering. And I said, that's a very sad thing for me to hear because I'd have to be a pathological liar to call you up and make up a story that
right.
I stuttered for 25 years, more than that.
Yeah.
I was still blocking on certain words in my 30s. And now I don't stutter. And so he couldn't accept it. I work with a guy in Las Vegas, a stutterer, who is engaged to a speech therapist. And
wow.
She can't help him.
Wow.
Because she
the
told him.
The only man who couldn't get help by a woman.
But isn't that amazing? But she told him that when they study stuttering in school, they only did it for a few hours on one day. They don't know how to cure stuttering.
Wow.
And it's a real, it's a body, mind, spirit approach.
Mm-hmm.
Everything is about spirituality.
Yeah, yeah.
It's to understand who you are, what makes you tick. And I always say to people, it's not important to ever say this is exactly why I started stuttering, but it's important to look at all the possibilities because no one starts stuttering when they're 20. They start 5, 6, 7 years old.
Right.
It's got to be something to do with what's going on in your life at the time. What's happening in your household.
Right.
And you know, our thoughts are not necessarily based on our experience. They're based on our interpretation of our experience.
Yes.
Which is the reason why you could have siblings that are completely different people.
I know.
Right? And if you ask them about their childhood, you'd think they had different parents.
Yes, exactly.
Because their interpretation of what happened is completely different.
Yep.
So all those things led me to start writing books on happiness. And I wound in 1999... You know, we have this mutual friend, Alan Steinfeld.
Love him.
Right? He's the best, yeah. Right? If you're into UFOs, lover. He wrote that book, Making Contact.
Oh, I've read it. You know, I've talked to him about it. I did
a thing with him and Deepak Chopra on a Zoom call, actually, not too long ago. And in 1999, I approached Dr. Henry Grayson, who is the founder of the National Institute of the Psychotherapies, a very well-known psychotherapist. And he had created a group called the Association for Spirituality and Psychotherapy. Their goal was to teach psychotherapists to incorporate spirituality into helping people to get better. Because it's not just about taking drugs like antidepressants or just talking to a therapist. There's a spiritual factor that you have to take into account. And when I talk, I always talk about the difference between spirituality and religion, because there are actually people who confuse the two.
Right.
And religion can be wonderful for people, but it tends to put us in a category and other people are automatically outside of that category.
Yeah.
And what spirituality does is it brings the whole world together, because all it asks is that you believe in a force greater than yourself. And you could call it nature, the universe, God, whatever is comfortable for you, as long as you know that it isn't you. Because when you think that you're the one who's controlling everything in your life, then you tend to blame yourself when things don't go the way you would like them to.
Correct.
I don't even want to say when things go bad.
Yeah.
Because I've had experiences where I thought something really bad happened and it turned out to be something good. I had a flat tire that saved my life once.
Oh.
That's a story.
Wait, real quick. What happened?
I wish I had brought it with me. I brought it to Minneapolis. I was about to go away for a weekend with a girl that I really wanted to spend time with. We had never gone away together before. We were going to the Hamptons. And as they brought my car around from the garage, I heard this weird noise. And I was like, what's that? And the guy says, it sounds like you're getting a flat tire, but we couldn't see where it was coming from. So I'm like, wow, this is a really negative way to start the weekend.
Yeah.
Like, I'm going to tell this girl I have a flat tire. I don't want to start the weekend like that. So in my crazy mind, I think to myself, maybe I won't tell her. Maybe I'll just try to drive for 2.5 hours and pray that I don't get a flat tire, right? So then on my way over there, I said, man logic, right? So I think, but it made sense to me. That's the problem with thinking.
We convince ourselves that our thinking is correct.
You can't believe your thoughts.
That's, I know.
That's another thing I said, because you created all your thoughts.
Yeah.
So they're skewed.
Yep.
So on the way over, I decide I'm going to call the AAA because I'm a member. So I call them up and I tell them, I think I'm going to get a flat tire. And they say, well, we can't help you. We can only help you once you get the flat tire, not to prevent the flat tire.
So
I'm like, oh, well, that's wonderful. So then he says to me, well, I'm going to give you the address of a garage to go to. So I pick up the girl and I tell her, listen, I had to tell her. I said, I have to stop off and get something fixed on the car. It sounds like something's weird is happening for my tire. She was very cool with it. Drive up to the garage. And as soon as I pull in, I see the man who's in charge and I immediately judge him. And I say, this man is not going to help me. Because I think I'm a mind reader. I think I know what you're thinking about me by looking at you, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Sure enough, he says to me, I'm sorry, I'm too busy to help you. But then he says, but I have a friend nearby who has a garage and I'm going to call him and ask him to see you, which was such a nice thing.
Yeah.
So here I misjudge this man, which people do. You think you can judge somebody just by seeing them.
Well, it's a survival thing too. Our brain is always judging and we forget that we don't have to.
Exactly. So I go to the next garage. It's like a garage from heaven. They're waiting for me outside. They usher me in.
Are you Jeffrey?
And he says, don't worry about it. We'll have you back on the road in no time. They put the car up on a lift and this nice guy from one of the islands, he calls me over and he's got a piece of metal in his hand. It's a circle with a screw through it. He took it out of my tire and he said to me, this was what was in your tire. He said, you would have had a flat. He goes, I'll fix it for you. You'll be on the road in no time. Girl's happy. I'm happy.
Yeah.
I go sit down. A few minutes later, he calls me over and he looks really shook up. And he said, I know you don't know about cars, but I got to show you this. He goes, this is amazing. He says, you see this rod? This rod controls your steering. Mm-hmm. And it was about to slip out. And if that rod slipped out, you would have lost control of your car. You would probably be killed. He goes, you're so lucky that you got a flat tire. Mm. And I was like, wow, that's such an amazing. And I have this piece of metal and I keep it. I brought it to Minneapolis.
Yeah.
Because when I gave my talk, I used that as an example of that. You don't know what's bad or good in your life.
Right.
It could be something that you say, why am I cursing my luck that everybody goes away, but I have to get a flat tire.
Yeah.
But here the flat tire saves my life.
Wow.
And I have a bunch of stories like that. And so interesting to show you that you can't trust your thinking sometimes.
Well, in your brain, your mind is just a thought process. Like it's churning out thoughts like a typewriter that never stops. And it's like you can either cling to them or you can just allow them to pass. And I think getting in control of your thoughts is the first step to living a life that's like way more magical and fun.
Well, for me now, since I don't stutter, you can't even shut me up. I talk.
I
have a lot to say, you know, but I interrupted my story. And so I approached Dr. Henry Grayson and I said to him, listen, my training is very different than yours, but if you're treating people with emotional illness who are depressed, especially a lot of them are grinding their teeth in their sleep and clenching during the day, and they're getting physical symptoms that you're not diagnosing or treating because that's not your field. Right. That's my field.
Right.
I said, and in order to help people gain wellness, you have to do a body, mind, spirit approach. You have to also treat those things because how can a person feel happy if their head hurts?
Right.
If you wake up in the morning with a terrible headache, you know, there are people who experience suicidal ideation mm-hmm. because the pain in their head is so bad. Yeah. They have migraine headaches that don't stop. And they don't know it's coming from their jaw. And so in this country alone, there's more than 150 million people who suffer with what they think are migraine headaches that are really musculoskeletal headaches that are coming from the muscles being overused.
Yeah.
So he accepted my work and he invited me to be on the board. And I spent 20 years on the board of this Association for Spirituality and Psychotherapy. And I wound up lecturing at energy psychology conferences to psychologists about their own field.
Wow.
Which cool. was, it was strange, but it was a big honor to lecture to people on their field. That was not my training, but they accepted my work.
Yeah.
And they were like, how do you know this? Because you're saying what we say, but in different words.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, a lot of it is intuitive. Mm-hmm. You know, I spent so much time studying the mind in order to cure myself.
Yep.
That I was able to do that. And it's a very important part of my life. And that's how I met Alan Steinfeld, because he's on the board also.
Cool.
And he does these amazing things with UFOs. And,
he does. I'm trying to talk to aliens and get abducted so hard.
Anything about consciousness. Through him, I got to meet J.J. Hertog. I don't know if you know that name. He's a PhD. If you look him up afterwards, he and his wife travel the world. He actually showed me pictures of aliens. I was allowed to be. I don't have the pictures, but he showed them to me. He said that there was a crash in Brazil.
Yes.
He said for some reason, a lot of them are in Brazil and they were insect forms. And he said he doesn't think that they're the ones who flew the craft. There were, some kind of craft crashed. And,
well, was this the one where the army guy came upon it and had telecommunication with it? And
that I don't know. Okay. I don't know if it's the same thing.
A lot of them do crash in Brazil.
But what he had pictures, and what he said to me was, he gave me an example. He said, if we sent a rocket up into space, and before it took off, rats snuck onto the rocket, and the rocket crashed on another planet that had life, and they found it, and the people were killed, they would think that the rats were the ones who flew the craft. He goes, that's what I think happened here. I think these were lower life forms because they were insectivorous. They were big like people,
what?
But they didn't have like a person's face. But they were just, like, had it like an insect
face.
You
saw a picture?
Yeah, he showed me pictures.
Wait,
I was allowed. I met a guy named John Cheshire who did the NBC special Mystery of the Sphinx. I'm very connected to ancient Egypt.
Ooh.
That's another thing that I have in common with Alan. And I often go to the Metropolitan Museum of Art on 81st and 5th mm-hmm. to connect to ancient Egypt.
Yeah. Oh,
when they're not looking, Egyptian. I touch the stones.
Yeah,
because I want to feel that energy.
Yeah. Well, when I touch things, when I go to historical places, a lot of times I will touch it with my hands and I feel something.
You feel the energy. Yeah.
Oh, my God. It feels like my hand's on fire.
Well, psychics have told me that that's where I'm originally from, ancient Egypt. Cool. And that makes sense to me. I have a very strong connection to it. There's something called the aha reaction. Mm-hmm. And what it means, if you believe in past lives.
Oh, I do.
And I do.
Dr. Brian Weiss, baby. His books are incredible. Well,
I believe in all positive things because it's arrogant to say that you know that something doesn't exist.
Yes.
Because we're just people. So our knowledge, our comprehension is very limited.
Yes.
Right? So when people say, oh, there's no God, there's no this or that. Well, how do you know? It's arrogant to say that you know that there is not that thing. Because it's a lot easier to just accept that there might be. Mm-hmm. Just open up your mind. If you can't open your mind to getting better, just to having a thought, if you knew that thought would help you and you block that thought, then you don't really want to help yourself.
Oh, and there's so many people that don't want to help themselves. Look, and it's don't you understand life is more fun and enjoyable and you could figure out what you're actually capable of if you do help yourself?
Yeah, I do a lot of work with 12-step people too. And in order to get better, you have to be willing. You have to open your mind to thoughts that you didn't have. In my book, I say, you can't get better with the same mind that got you sick.
Right, right.
You already know all of your thoughts. Mm-hmm. And if your thoughts were working for you, you'd be fine. You'd be perfect. So it's obvious that you need new thoughts.
Yes.
And what those new thoughts are very often are ancient spiritual wisdom. Mm. A different way of looking at things. One of the things that I say in my book is that you can't change your past. The only thing you could change is your perspective of your past.
Yes. Yeah.
How you view things, how you look at the things that happened to you.
There was a reel on Instagram that I came across the other day as I was kind of reeling, no pun intended, about just issues in my life with parents. I don't speak to either of my parents, and that's caused me a lot of just a lot of feelings. And so this guy that I just happened to scroll by, he said, "Your parents' dysfunction is a gift." And I'm like, ooh, I love that perspective. I love that perspective. It's empowering. It doesn't, it doesn't shit on them, which does not feel good.
No, of course not.
And it kind of elevates everybody in terms of Earth. I'm really into past lives. And so when you're in a play, I've been in many plays. I don't know if you've been in a play, but
yes,
lot of times it's fun to play a bad guy because you're like, what is this? You know, the villain is always just preposterous and, just kind of a big character. And I feel like some people come here and we play certain parts to learn and to learn how to love each other and to see if we can have compassion for people that, not many people have compassion for. So a reframe is the most powerful tool you can give yourself.
It's so interesting that you said that. About parents, there's a spiritual concept. First of all, every single thing that happens to you is part of your path.
Yes.
It's acceptance. Supposedly, we choose our parents before we're born.
To
learn lessons that we didn't learn in a previous life.
Totally.
And talking about compassion. So in 2015, I had this heart attack and it came out of nowhere. And, the night before I was partying with the Sirius XM people, I had been a regular on Sirius XM for a couple of years. We were out partying and dancing. The next day, all of a sudden, I have this weird feeling in my chest. And it was pouring rain, and I had an appointment with a chiropractor, my first visit with this new chiropractor. And I get this pain in my chest, and I'm rubbing it, and it feels better. I'm like, well, you can't rub away a heart attack, so maybe it's nothing. Maybe I've been working out a lot. I thought maybe it was muscular.
Getting too swollen.
And it's raining really hard, and it sounds stupid, but I don't like to go out in the rain because of my hair. It's the truth.
Girl, same. Yeah,
I know. So, but I decide I'm going to go, and I get on the subway, and the pain is getting worse, and I'm rubbing, and it feels a little better, and then it comes back. And I get off the subway, and I have about 6 blocks to walk to the doctor's office. And for some reason, I don't know why, I turned down 50th Street towards Radio City Music Hall, mm-hmm. and there's a police car, a van with 4 cops in the van. Now, it's very embarrassing to try to tell somebody you think you're having a heart attack.
Oh, I guess, yeah, you don't know.
What if you're not? It's really weird, to walk up to somebody and say, anyway, I said I'd be an awful schmuck if I just die in the street and I don't tell anybody.
Yeah.
So I knock on the window. I'm holding an umbrella, knock on the window. And I said to the cop, I'm sorry to bother you, but I think I'm having a heart attack. And he says, well, I think you should go to the hospital. And I'm like, well, that's why I'm telling you. I'm not just telling everyone.
Help, yeah.
I thought they would say to me, I thought they'd say, yeah, hop in and we'll put on the siren. And
right.
You know, no, he says, well, we're stuck in traffic. It'll probably be faster if you walk.
Oh, well, that could very well be
true, I guess. So I'm like, well, where's the nearest hospital? Yeah. So he didn't know. So he takes out his phone and he starts looking up hospitals. And he says to me, do you have Google Maps? And I'm like standing there in the rain, like having a heart attack. And I said, no. He said, well, I think you should download Google Maps. So that's when I walked away because I'm like, my life is a Woody Allen movie. This is ridiculous.
Does your patrol car have Wi-Fi that I could hook up to real quick?
This is like ridiculous. So, but I could only get another half a block. And I see the Jimmy Fallon sign. And I'm like, don't let me die before I do Fallon. That's how sick it was. So there's another cop there with like a walkie-talkie. And I do the same thing. Sorry to bother you. I think I'm having a heart attack. And he says to me, well, stand on the side. So I stand on the side a couple of minutes. I'm like, are they coming? He's like, oh, I'm sorry, I didn't call them yet. Everybody was very calm.
Like a who's on first for keeping Jeffrey alive. Jesus.
But you know why I think? Because I was very calm.
Right.
I wasn't nervous.
Yeah.
My spiritual training said to me, for whatever reason, this is your path.
Yeah.
This is a really weird thing that if I'm having a heart attack, this is a really weird thing to happen in the middle of someone's day.
Yeah.
So finally, a fire truck comes and five firemen get off the truck.
Oh, you lucky.
And they say to me, who's the patient? I said, me. The guy goes, well, climb up on the truck. And I said, really? He goes, nah, we're just effing with you. I don't know if you can curse on
you. You can say fuck.
Yeah.
He's like,
yeah, we're just fucking with you. And they all start to laugh. Everyone is just joking, right? Then an ambulance finally comes and two guys get out who think it's hilarious that both their names are Mike. Hey, I'm Mike and this is Mike. And they
weren't over the joke yet after being partners.
and they take me in the ambulance and they start an IV, but they're not convinced I'm having a heart attack because leave it to me. I have to be so unique. I have the kind of heart attack that doesn't show on an EKG.
Wow.
And they drive very slowly. They don't put the siren on. I'm like, why aren't you putting a siren on? And they're like, because it's raining and we'd have to go through lights and we're not convinced you're having a heart attack.
Oh, cool.
And so it's safer for you if we drive slowly. They finally get me to the hospital, and I feel something spray on my cheek. They're like, what was that? They're like, nitroglycerin. I said, it's supposed to go under your tongue. The whole thing was like ridiculous. So they finally get me to the hospital, and the doors won't open. They can't get me in. And the guy had to climb up. He says, don't worry. One way or another, we're getting you in there. Some genius saved me. They put me on blood thinners. They found out that I was having what they call a widowmaker heart attack. Very serious.
Oh, that's a great name.
Luckily, I wasn't married anymore, so yeah. There was no widow, so I was able to survive. And they put me on blood thinners, and they saved me. And so I'm on the operating table the next day, and I'm not completely asleep, and I feel them unplugging my heart. And I said to the surgeon, I feel you in my heart, not in a romantic way.
Yeah, right.
And the whole surgical team started to laugh. And he came to my room later and he hugged me. He goes, in all my years of doing surgery, no one has ever joked with me on the operating table before. And I was back on stage 5 days later at New York Comedy Club. And Emilio says to me, what are you, crazy? You just had a heart attack. And I'm like, yeah, but it's hard to get a spot here.
You booked me.
I don't
want to
lose my spot.
Yeah.
And so that just shows you that if you can stay positive, that it helps you to get through a lot of stuff. It happened with COVID.
Yeah.
March of 2020, you know, I'm a trendsetter. I went right out and got COVID.
Nice.
I don't want to wait. COVID, double pneumonia.
Okay.
Single
bragging.
Was not good enough for me. Yeah, double pneumonia. And I'm in the hospital and I waited 2 weeks. I was afraid to call an ambulance because the heart thing, they were telling people, stay out of the emergency room if you don't have to
go. You're going to get Nathan and Nathan not believing you.
So I got, exactly. So they wheel me in and they wheel me into the emergency room. I finally called an ambulance. The first act of kindness, two men show up in hazmat suits. One of them takes my hand and he says to me, don't worry, you're going to make it.
Aww.
And it was a small act of kindness, but I can't tell you how important it was to me.
Yeah.
I was so sick for 2 weeks. I dragged myself to the door. I could barely walk. And he was amazed that I could get on the stretcher myself. He said, most people need to be carried. And I'll never forget what he said, of all the people I've taken to the hospital, you have the best physical presentation of being able to move by yourself. They wheel me in and they put me in a cubicle next to a woman who's screaming, literally screaming with every breath. And I wanted them to move me because
guys, this dying lady's energy sucks. Can I get another bed?
Most people would say, like, why me? When you're in a situation like that, it's normal to think, why me, right?
Of course, which
is the spiritual answer is, why not me?
Yeah.
Whoever promised you that your life is supposed to be perfect, that nothing's supposed to happen. So again, I had to remind myself, this is my path. And to make a long story short, I had to remind myself, they couldn't move me anywhere. They were out of rooms. This woman is screaming and is driving me crazy. I had to step outside myself and think of how much pain she must be in, how scared she must be, compassion. And they came back. They were actually thinking of sending me home until they x-rayed my lungs. And they said, we're sorry to tell you, you have COVID double pneumonia. We're going to find a room for you. And they kept me there until they got my oxygen up. But that was another example where I had to walk the walk, not just talk the talk.
Yeah.
In order to stay sane and to stay a little bit stronger, because I was very weak, I had to think about this woman and not myself.
Yeah, and she made it easy.
And that's a lot about spirituality. Yeah, she made it easy. Yeah. But
that was a gift.
It was driving me insane, though, listening to her.
Yeah.
So anyway, that has to do with the Association for Spirituality and Psychotherapy and how I wound up writing these books on thought and happiness.
Yeah.
And the second book was called Fight the Fear, because so many of us are living with fear. I still battle fear on a daily basis, I never let it stop me.
Yeah, right.
You know,
you feel the fear, do it anyway. You breathe into it.
In 2019, I made myself go to Japan by myself because it was the scariest thing I could think of to do. I always wanted to go to Japan. And 2 years in a row, my friend copped out. He couldn't go. And the third year, I'm like, fuck it. I'm going myself.
Yeah.
And I studied Japanese and I went 14-hour flight. I was never on a plane that long. And I have fears of getting lost. I was lost every day in Japan.
Yeah.
Their subway system is crazy.
Yeah.
I did it. I performed in 2 comedy shows while I was there. I went to 2 spiritual meetings. I went to every city. I went from Tokyo to Osaka to Kyoto. And I made it.
It's incredible. The brain is a very powerful tool. It's like it could be your greatest enemy, but it could also be your absolute best asset. Like, I've cured myself of so many things. And it's that when you're a kid, kids are really smart and we don't give them enough
credit.
Isn't
that interesting? That
kids are very intelligent. I knew as a kid, I did remote viewing as a kid. I didn't understand that that's what it was. But like if I was waiting to get picked up by somebody and I was like, where are they? I would sit on my porch, close my eyes and put myself in the back of their car, look around at what road they were on. Figure out when they were about to turn on my street, open my eyes, and there was the car. I'm like, but it wasn't like when it first started happening, I was like, cool. But then I was like, this is natural. I've cured myself from I had a fear of needles, like getting an IV and stuff. Mm-hmm. I'm like, I'm going to pretend I'm a person that loves getting an IV. It's my favorite part of my day. I get so lucky. And it works so well. Like your brain is so powerful when you use it right.
If you understand how it works or how it doesn't work, that's why you're able to do a show like you're doing now. You're fulfilling those things that you had in an earlier life.
Totally.
We're given like I said, I started doing this when I'm 6-7 years old.
Yeah.
I realized that I could take away certain pain with my hands. And that's what opened me up to past lives. And it's very, it's very, very
real. Have you done
a
regression? I have.
Regression?
A past life regression?
You know what? I was supposed to do it with a man who was one of the inventors of it. I don't know if that's the right term. Daniel Miller was a doctor who was part of that board.
Yeah.
And I trusted. I was afraid to go back because I think I was tortured in the Middle Ages.
Possibly.
I have a very strong draw to the Middle Ages, but I'm always thinking about stuff like that. And I really think that I was tortured in the Middle Ages. And so I was afraid to do it because I heard stories that people could get stuck in the past.
What?
And Daniel Miller was the guy who was one of the first people to do it. He was an older man and he had an office in Mexico. I don't know. Whatever happened, he passed away before he could do it. And I never trusted anybody else to do it.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
I really wanted to do
I've
it.
I've done them. So I have a friend who's very spiritual and she does this. Like she's a coach. She works with people and she wanted to do like a little pilot program where she figured out what she wanted to teach people. And we did a past life regression, a bunch of them. And it's so interesting, like intuition, like when you get psychic downloads, it's super subtle.
How far did you go back?
I only went back. I went back to whatever is going to help me in this lifetime. Like, what do I need to look at in this that's going to help me in this lifetime understand things? And yeah, I went and I was immediately. I knew exactly where I was immediately. I knew the decade that it was. I knew
was
what I was going to do.
Was it in the 1900s or before?
It was in the 1600s.
Oh, so you did.
And
go
I was
back
in the middle
far.
Of the woods. Yeah, yeah. I was in the middle of the woods, and I knew I was going to a man's house who was my ex-boyfriend Steven, but not him in that body. Right. It was in another body. I was going to get a substance, a liquid. I knew, and this came to me right away because I was like, how do I know if this shit is real? And just immediately, I'm like, I'm here. This is, I'm wearing like a burlappy kind of thing. I'm going to
1600s,
this house.
You're wearing the appropriate cotton.
Yeah, right.
A burlap sack.
Yeah, basically.
But you made it look good, I'm sure.
Yes. I was getting a poison to kill my mother, who is my mother in this lifetime, because I knew that if I didn't kill her, she was going to kill me. Wow. And I was like, whoa, that's wild. That's really, and I'll never know if that's true, but like the information came to me right away. And then I did, this is crazy, a future life regression
with that same woman.
And that was, talk about your ego. I look to check, like the comfort zone is a very toxic place to be, your comfort zone. Mm-hmm. And you're very familiar, you're a great example of, if I'm afraid of doing something, I'm actually going
to
lean in.
You have to.
I think
do
that's
it.
Beautiful. That's what I try to do all the time. And so whenever I feel myself getting too comfortable, I'm like, how can I be pushing myself more? Because it's all about evolving. Mm-hmm. And so I did the future life regression, which my ego was like, oh, I don't, this is weird. And it was very clear imagery and this weird technology that I like saw in my mind's eye that I'm like, I'll never know if this is true. It could be absolute horseshit, but information flooded in. And I thought that was so interesting.
But was it helpful to you?
It was more cool.
Was it scary?
It was interesting. My ego was scared, but I know well enough to know when it's my ego scared, it's calm down. You're going to be okay. I wanted to ask you, do you still use your hands to heal?
Yeah.
Can you still use your hands to heal like jaw pain?
Yeah.
Can you see if I have any jaw pain?
Sure.
What do you want me to do? I just want to see because I do have it. Okay. Do you want me to come to you or you want to come to me?
I don't mind.
Tell me what you want me to do.
Well, I don't know. I just have to see.
I'll do this. We can get the camera angle.
Well, what's good is that you don't have a click. A lot of people have a click in their jaw when their TMJ is off. So,
for the audio listeners, it's Mike, by the way. For the audio listeners, Jeffrey now is rubbing Christina's left cheek, the back of her jaw. What do we got, Jeffrey? Anything?
Yeah, there's a lot of tightness.
Tightness, we're hearing.
Does one side bother you more than the rest?
Usually the side you're on.
The side I'm on?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm releasing. What I'm doing is I'm releasing the masseter muscle. There are three muscles, basically, that control the jaw. The masseter muscles are the cheek muscles. Then there's muscles back here, the occipital muscles, which can be very tender for people who grind.
Wow, and, way more relaxed.
And what they don't know is in here,
that always hurts.
The muscles actually go into the shoulder area. Mm. Let me do this side.
And now Jeffrey is switching sides. He's going to the right side. There you go. Yeah, I would prop that mic up a little, Christina.
Wow. Jeffrey, you're great.
This awesome. Yeah, should feel really
that
good.
That feels freaking great.
And if I had gloves, I would do it inside your mouth. Intraorally is very powerful.
Take me out to dinner first. Yeah,
at least I could do.
Wow. I'm so relaxed. Oh my God, I feel like my voice got deeper.
You also go around.
Can you gain information from doing this about the person, or you just know to release?
The only information I can gain is how you feel physically.
Okay.
It's not like I can do readings, but all these points, what I'm doing is I'm pressing on shiatsu points.
Okay.
Do you ever get headaches?
No, very rarely. But my jaw and shoulders and neck are often tense.
So I'll turn your head over this way.
This is great.
That feels really good, right? But I'm realigning the muscle spindles.
Ooh, cool.
Just describe what's going on to me.
Yes, okay. This is Tim now describing.
I'm too relaxed to talk.
It seems you're using your thumb.
On both sides. I'm using my thumbs along the masseter muscles across the TMJ, the temporomandibular joint, to release the tension in the muscles. Because when muscles get overused, like if you go to the gym, you can do a certain amount of exercise before the muscles get tired.
Right.
And if you try to do more than that, sometimes you can push out a few more reps. But if you do too much, the muscle will cramp up. Mm. That's what's happening with her. Ah. The muscles are cramped. They're tight. And so what I'm doing is I'm putting energy into them to open them up, to allow the blood to flow. Because that's where headaches come from. When the muscles, this feels like bone, but it's really... it's bone covered by a thin layer of muscle.
Cute.
So now Jeffrey's hand is on Christina's head, top of her head, and he is sort of looks like rubbing the back neck muscles. Is that fair to say? Mm-hmm. Christina, do you feel relaxed?
Yeah. Wow. Ugh, this is great.
So I love doing this. So I created something called Star Therapy.
Star Therapy?
I read
the acronym in your intro.
And Star stands for Spiritual, Transformational, Affirmative Resonance Therapy. The resonance stands for music, because I use music.
That's where
I have
a lot of attention. Yeah, oh, shit.
And I did a guided meditation with a very famous musician named Stephen Halpern.
I know that name.
Yeah, well, Stephen Halpern is considered the father of New Age music.
Oh.
And it's a crazy story because, I'm sorry.
Are you good?
I wrote him a letter 20 years ago.
Yeah.
To tell him that I was using his music to take away pain from people.
Cool.
Because the second chakra is what absorbs music. And music is very powerful in terms of healing people. In terms of taking away pain,
yes,
and making them feel better.
Instant mood changer.
You know,
that's why I love Beyoncé.
To make you feel really happy when you listen to them.
Like Church Girls by Beyoncé.
Yeah, and so Stephen Halpern, I didn't hear from him. And then just before the pandemic, I came home one day and there was a message on my phone. He said, I'm calling you in reference to a letter that you sent me 20 years ago. He never saw it. His assistant filed it away thinking it wasn't important. I guess he gets a lot of fan letters. And he tracked me down. Luckily, my numbers were still the same.
Whoa.
And he said to me, he was so moved by what I wrote because I was so impressed with his music. He said, I want to put music to your words. And he said, write a guided meditation and send it to me and I'll put music to it. And so it's on his website now. It's called Journey to Your Heart.
Journey to Your Heart?
Yes.
Is the meditation?
It's the meditation by Stephen Halpern.
Wow.
And Jeffrey Gurian. And
wow.
And because I do, it's heart-centered work.
Yeah. That's all
energy, all healing comes from the heart.
Wow. So I feel like
what I'm doing is I'm smoothing your energy field.
I was just going to say, I feel like
this
energy
is just
field
like
is
a
vibrating.
Tiny taste. I mean, it's
of course.
You know, I'm so glad that you asked for a sample of it.
Oh, I did. I always seek out, like, I want to experience the thing if I can, if it's, you know, when appropriate and possible.
But now when you open and close your mouth, see if it feels like it opens a little bit easier than it did before.
Yeah. I mean, there's no more tension in my jaw.
That's beautiful.
I feel, I don't even know. Yeah, really relaxed.
No, that's so great.
Really
that
relaxed.
You can feel it because that's just a small example.
I could take
usually
a nap.
I do like an hour.
That's so cool.
With healing music, you know, special
check my
music.
Eyeliner.
And
so I want to ask you. I have one final question for you.
Sure.
I had at the show. Wait, what? But it didn't get off the ground for a number of reasons. But I was so excited about it and the topics. And so one of the questions I wanted to ask everybody was like, what was, you know, I've had a lot of experiences in my life. I've had psychic surgery before, which I don't usually talk about because I'm like, people are like, what? Like, I'm not trying to convince anybody that it's real. But I've had it done on my knees, and my mom had it done, and I.
Who's that psychic healer in Brazil? Do you know the very famous one? I'm blanking on his name.
No, but Brazil has a lot of them. A lot of healings, energies in Brazil. This guy removed scar tissue from my mom. And I felt it before he did it. And I felt it after. I'm like, the scar tissue is not there anymore. He didn't even touch her actual skin. It was just hovering.
Look, I'll tell you a crazy story that I don't often say. An ex-girlfriend of mine called me. And she told me that they found a lump in her breast and that they were going to do surgery on her the next day.
Wow.
And we had been together for a long time, but I hadn't seen her in a long time. And I said, I have to come over and see you. I need to prepare you for this. And so I went to see her in Queens. I drove out that same night, and I worked on her energetically. And the next morning, she called me. And I say this story with all due humility. It doesn't come from me. She called me in tears, and she said, they can't find the lump.
Yep, I knew that's what you were going to say.
Two different doctors examined me. They're sending me home. They can't find the lump.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, I had no, I didn't really know what I did, but I came from my heart.
Yeah.
And it happened with my parents too. My mom had colon cancer,
oof,
bilateral. And my dad had diabetes, and they were going to amputate his leg.
Oh, my God.
And I couldn't accept it. And I worked on him for about 10 days before this surgery. And the circulation came back in his leg. With diabetes, a lot of diabetics lose circulation.
Yeah.
And they have to lose fingers and toes and stuff. And
right.
They were going to take his whole leg. And I worked on him, as I said, for about 10 days. And they only had to remove his little toe.
Oh.
And the surgeon said to me, well, my dad told the surgeon, my son was working on me. And I asked the surgeon if he would do an article with me, if he would co-author an article. And he said, I don't believe in that. I can't do. He said,
you just saw proof.
He said, I'll give you a letter stating that I don't know why the circulation came back in his leg, because it did. He did something called a Doppler, which measures the circulation in someone's leg.
Mm-hmm.
He said, I'll give you a letter stating that I don't know why it happened, but I can't put my name to something that I don't believe in.
Right, right.
And I didn't care, because I was able to help my dad.
Yeah.
And with my mom, she had to have this surgery, bilateral colon surgery. And the surgeon said to me, I don't know what you did, but her body was so calm that we were able to get everything out.
Wow.
And she was on her feet the next day.
Wow.
Yeah. And so, when you care for somebody, your energy is really strong.
Yes.
But you can also do it for strangers.
Yeah, would be the coolest. I want to learn how to do that. My boyfriend has plantar fasciitis in his heel, and it's such sharp pain.
It's very painful.
And so I was like, I just want to see, just lay down. It's not gonna make it worse. So I just did, I don't know. I just kind of intuitively just like touched his foot and worked around his foot and just tried a bunch of stuff. And I did it a couple times, but the first time I did it, he's like, the hell? I don't feel a pain anymore. I'm like, yeah. But I think I got too cocky. And then the next time I did it, I was like, sit down. And then it didn't work.
You just have to realize that you're a channel for universal energy.
Right.
You're channeling. You can't feel that it comes from you.
Which I don't. Yeah. You got to step aside and let it work through you. Right.
A friend of mine once called me, and he told me that his brother was in a coma. He called me from LA. I have a bunch of these stories that are so weird. He called me from L.A. and he said, my brother's in a coma. Do you think that you could do something for him? I said, I never did anything for anything that serious. He was dying of AIDS, and he was only 35 years old. And he said to me, would you go to the hospital and see him? And I couldn't say no. As I said, of course. So I went, and it was very awkward. His mother was there. I didn't know his mother. And I had to say, well, your son asked me to come and do something. And so he's in a coma, and I was working on his heart chakra. I didn't know what to do, to be honest with you. I did what I thought I should do.
Yeah.
And they called me, and they said his chances went from 10% to 20%. Would you come back the next night? Next night, I could only get there 1 in the morning. I went, and it was just me and his mom, and I did the same thing. And now they called me, and his chances went up to 30%. And I got really nervous because I didn't know what I was doing.
Yeah.
And I didn't want them to think that I was responsible for his life. It was a very, very strange feeling. The next day, my dad had to go into the hospital, and I couldn't go back. And that weekend, I was overcome with a sadness that I had never felt before. I felt suicidal.
Wow.
And I didn't know what was happening. And in the midst of that, I got a call from a woman named Marcy Calhoun, who wrote the book, Are You Really Too Sensitive? Talk about writing people letters who didn't answer. I had written her a letter a couple of years before, and she never answered me.
People get your letters when they should, I guess.
And she called me in the middle of that thing. And I said, how could you possibly know to call me? I told her what was happening. And she said to me, because I'm an empath, I'm a psychic.
Yeah.
And I knew that you needed to hear from me.
Yeah.
And she explained to me that I internalized, that young man passed away that weekend.
Mm-hmm.
She said, you're an empath. You internalized his sadness because he felt that he let his family down.
Mm.
And she said, go to the funeral home and tell him that it's okay.
Yeah, yeah.
And I did that. I went, and my sadness was lifted.
Wow.
And I have these a bunch of stories like that.
What is your biggest, wait, what moment that like blew you out of the water? Like I was saying, the psychic surgery, when I first experienced that, I was like, whoa, 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 whoa. And then the other moment for me was my friend's grandmother passed away in her uncle's home. There was a nanny cam video on the fireplace that was leading into her room. And she showed me this video a couple of days after she passed. She goes, my grandmother said she saw my grandfather who had passed away. And then the next morning she'd woke up and said she had a visit with him. And we were like, oh, okay, Nona. Mm-hmm. And they checked the nanny cam and there's this orb of light floating into her room. And then this gigantic, it looked like a bomb went off, but there's no sound. And then the light got sucked back in to her room. And that was the night that she said she saw her husband, her deceased husband. And that video changed my life forever. What is something that you have experienced and seen, whether you were at the helm of it or not, that you were like, this is wild?
So many things, but there was one case that sticks out. A woman called me from Egypt, and I thought it was a prank call.
Too much tuna.
I don't remember what happened in between, but she wound up calling me back again. I guess I had answered the phone. I didn't think it was real. She told me that she asked if I did remote healing. And I know a man named John Mullen who lives in Georgia who does remote healing. He does sends healing energy to other countries.
Cool.
I didn't know anything about it, but I have this belief. If people find you out of the millions of people in the world, in the universe, there's a reason for it.
Yes.
So I said, I don't do remote healing. She said she took her mother on vacation to Egypt and they were riding a camels, and her mother fell off and broke her neck.
Woo.
And she's in a coma. And is there something that I can do? I said, I've never done anything like that before. But again, if you found me of all the people in the world, I'm supposed to do something.
Yeah.
I said, I'll try. So it turned out that her mother didn't make it. Her mother passed away. But when she called me back, she said, I understand now why I found you. I gave her a perspective. She was feeling so guilty that I helped her through it. And she said that by the things that I said to her, which is so important because you never know what you say that another person needs to hear. It could be something very simple for you. She said that I guided her through this terrible experience and took away her guilt because she felt so guilty that she took her mother away and her mother died as a result of it.
Right.
And she said, now I understand why I called you, because I gave her a spiritual perspective that helped her deal with what she was going through.
Yeah.
And that was a very powerful thing that happened to me.
That's incredible. Well, thank you, Jeffrey. Thank you for doing what you do, for all the things you do, for your time. Go to his, if you're in the Rhinebeck, New York area, September 20th through the 22nd.
Well, even if you're not, it's only 90 miles from New York. You can drive up for the weekend.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I've driven up there from New York City all the time. Sure. It's a gorgeous drive.
Gorgeous.
What else would you like to promote? Promote away.
Well,
this is your camera. You can talk to camera. You talk to me.
So my happiness books, if you could hold that one up, the one with the meditating dog on the cover. You know how hard it is to get a dog to sit in lotus position?
So
almost impossible.
Yeah.
It's called Healing Your Heart by Changing Your Mind, A Spiritual and Humorous Approach to Achieving Happiness. It's the first happiness book that I wrote that achieved bestseller status on Amazon.
Cool.
And then there was Fight the Fear, if you can hold that up.
Oh, yes.
And Fight the Fear, Overcoming Obstacles That Stand in Your Way, about all the types of fear that we face and how it's important to stand up to it. And the last book I wrote when I was recovering from COVID is called Facing Adversity, Stories of Courage and Inspiration.
Cool.
And it's true stories of people that I collected over 20 years.
Oh, that's cool.
I started cutting out articles. In 1999, I cut out articles of people who overcame amazing obstacles to lead happy, meaningful lives.
Ooh.
Quick story. 3-year-old boy playing hide and seek. He hides behind a tractor, puts his hands in the tractor, and it cuts off his hands.
Okay.
And his father is a surgeon, and he sees it happen, races the little boy to the hospital. But he's not a transplant surgeon. He doesn't know how to do that kind of surgery. And it's a holiday, and there are no transplant surgeons around. So the father assembles a team of 9 people, and they work on this little boy for like 10 hours. They reattach his hands. They put them in casts. After a couple of months, they take off the cast and the hands are alive, but they're not functional.
Huh.
So the grandfather is a martial artist and he trains that little boy growing up every day to reuse his hands. And today that little boy is a famous spinal surgeon.
Wow.
And he runs the spinal surgery clinic in a hospital in Colorado.
Oh, wow.
When I wrote that, when I read that story, it just blew me away. That's I couldn't believe it. I checked it out. They're all true.
Yeah, right.
And I'm like,
I love that.
I've done surgery. I know what a steady hand you have to have.
Yes.
He loses his hands. They're reattached. And now he's a spinal surgeon.
Woo.
He was going to become a hand surgeon. But spinal surgery is one of the most difficult types of surgery there
yes.
is to do.
Yes, yes, yes.
So this book is filled with, it's an inspirational book to tell cool. people that no matter what obstacles you're facing in life, there's always a way to overcome them.
Yeah.
If you can draw on this inner strength that you don't even know you have mm-hmm. sometimes, that there's a way to overcome obstacles. And that's the message that my goal is always to put out positive energy to the universe.
Mm-hmm.
So I thank you so much for having me on today. Yeah. This is very special for me, not
My
only
pleasure.
To see you, but to be able to talk about all these things. Because yeah. you can't have this conversation with everybody.
I know. But comedians are like, oh, okay. Yeah, I'm like, yeah, no, give me that. All of your spiritual powers. That's
yeah,
so cool.
Well,
Jeffrey,
so nice.
Thank you so much for being here. Appreciate you. Love you to death. You're the best. Yeah, thanks, guys. Congrats on surviving another week. We'll talk to you next Monday.